Well, good evening and welcome to Thinking Out Loud on KBIA, a fashion show coming soon to raise awareness and funding for an organization that fights against human trafficking. And that word going to tell us about that later on tonight's show. In just a moment, though, we talk with Dr. Peter Onuf. As you know, KBIA, when we changed our format around recently, added a lot of new programs, news and conversation programs, including a show that you hear on Wednesday evenings called Backstory with the American History Guys. Really great show. Well, one of those hosts of that show, Dr. Peter Onuf, will be coming to Columbia next week. He and Annette Gordon-Reed will both be here talking about their new book. It's called Most Blessed of the Patriots. It's a book about Thomas Jefferson. We're going to talk with Dr. Peter Onuf next. I do want to make one quick point. I typed my notes before visiting with Dr. Onuf in a bit of a hurry, and I got the name of the book a little bit incorrect. I think I say Most Blessed of Patriarchs. It is indeed Most Blessed of the Patriarchs. So let's get that clear and visit with Dr. Peter Onuf on Thinking Out Loud. It's Thinking Out Loud from KBIA. Peter Onuf is our guest. He is the co-author of the new book, Most Blessed of Patriarchs, Thomas Jefferson and the Empire of the Imagination. And he will be in town Monday, April 4th. There's going to be a public forum at Leadership Auditorium in the MU Student Center, and then what's being called a town gown dinner lecture with both Professor Onuf and the co-author of the book, Annette Gordon-Reed. Both of these events are sponsored by the Kinder Institute on Congressional Democracy here at the university, and you can find out about those online at democracy.missouri.edu. In addition to being considered one of the nation's preeminent Jefferson experts, Dr. Onuf is the host of Backstory with the American History Guys that you hear Wednesday evenings at 7 here on KBIA. Dr. Onuf, welcome. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us today.
Hey, Darren. Good to be here.
You have written several books on Thomas Jefferson. Tell me what's new about this one.
Well, the big myth about Thomas Jefferson, which we're attempting to explode, is that he's unknowable, that there's this great distinction between private and public. My distinguished predecessor at Virginia called him impenetrable. You couldn't get into Jefferson. He had a secret life which we'll never understand. And we're not the first historians to challenge that idea, but I think we've offered a new biography of Jefferson, kind of a thematic biography, that shows what it means when we put these things together. That is, how we put the real Jefferson as we see him, the inner Jefferson, into play in the real world.
Dr. Onuf, your co-author, Annette Gordon-Reed, teaches legal history at Harvard Law, which is kind of an interesting approach to things. And she's also written about Jefferson pretty extensively. Tell me how her perspective was maybe a little bit different and what that added to the book from your own research.
Oh, added. I'm privileged to be working with Annette, who's a superb historian. You know, the history of slavery is really, at one level, a pretty abstract level, the history of law, because it's law that makes slaves. And so her specialty as a lawyer and legal historian is very apropos when we're talking about a man whose current reputation is shaped by his slaveholding. So that's the most important thing, I think. But I'd also emphasize that she is a first-rate social historian, and many legal historians are social historians. When you get down to individual cases, how the law impacts individuals, her wonderful Pulitzer Prize-winning book, The Hemingses of Monticello, is a reconstruction of the lives of Jefferson's children, mixed-race children with Sally Hemings, that illuminates experiences that we thought we would never be able to recapture. So what we're doing in this book, in a way, is carrying on in the spirit of Annette's previous book, merging her expertise in law and social history with my interest in ideas.
We're talking with Dr. Peter Onuf. He's a professor emeritus at the University of Virginia, one of the authors of Most Blessed of Patriarchs, Thomas Jefferson and the Empire of the Imagination. He'll be on the University of Missouri campus Monday, the 4th of April. And we were talking about race, and you mentioned the contradictions here, and obviously some things about Jefferson are certainly seen in a modern context as contradictory, that the man who owned hundreds of slaves wrote, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal." Do some of these founding contradictions or maybe hypocrisies, as some might see it, is one of the reasons that we've had so much trouble addressing this particular issue of race in a nation. And believe me, I work on the University of Missouri campus. We've seen firsthand.
Right.
We see it's still a big deal.
Well, these are founding contradictions, you might say, but I would say, Darren, that they are contradictions because of where we stand now, looking back. One of the things that we resist is the knee-jerk notion that Jefferson had to be a hypocrite, which is another way of saying that his world didn't make sense to him, that he systematically lied and misrepresented that world. That's what we see now, and that's understandable. In fact, I see it too, and everybody would emphasize that contradiction. But how do you understand slaveholding, not justify it or extenuate it? We'd be the last people to do that. It's by understanding how Jefferson sees his slaves in his life on his plantation. One of the reasons why we spend so much time in our book talking about Jefferson at Monticello and in the company of slaves. The idea that he could have ideas about slavery that had nothing to do with his experience with slaves is absurd. So the challenge for us is to understand how anybody could accommodate the injustice of slavery and injustice that Jefferson himself emphasized. How could he live with it, we ask. Well, that was his life, and that's what we want to reconstruct. And one of the simple ideas, Darren, is that you have to see slavery on the plantation as part of a household economy. It's a domestic institution, as Southerners called it, up until the time of the Civil War, emphasizing it had something to do with home and all those family values that are associated with home. Jefferson could assume the abstract position that slavery is an injustice, it's evil, but he could say, I'm not an evil master. I have a familial responsibility, a domestic responsibility to the people I own. The title of her book is taken from a letter that Jefferson writes to Angelica Schuyler Church, Alexander Hamilton's sister-in-law, about his plans for life at Monticello when he retires from being Secretary of State. And if you go on in that letter, you'll see he talks about looking after the happiness of those who provide for mine. That's a direct statement about slavery, and it includes that famous Jeffersonian notion of happiness. It's a little bit jarring for us, just as we think the idea that he's a patriarch might be jarring to modern readers. What? A patriarch is supposed to be the icon of American democracy? That represents for us all of the old notions of supremacy and domination that we believe that we've overcome.
There, it's easy to make this so very simple. He was a slave owner. He said he was against slavery. There's a hypocrisy there. You got to look deeper at this, which kind of gets into the next thing that I wanted to talk about, and that we still find very interesting about him. Since you're speaking at the University of Missouri, let's talk about his contributions to higher education. I know you taught for some time at UVA. Mizzou is not only in the Louisiana Purchase, thanks in large part to Jefferson, but the university was kind of founded with the University of Virginia as a model. If anybody ever walks across the Francis Quadrangle and goes, hey, why is there a statue of Thomas Jefferson here at Missouri? That's why.
Yeah.
Talk about his views on education and a university's place in our society.
Well, I think the important thing, Darren, is to keep in mind that Jefferson is a man of the Enlightenment and that we do not live in an enlightened age. One thing to keep in mind whenever you do history is that the past is, as an English novelist Hartley put it, a foreign country. It's not like our world. It's different. And that's what historians are trying to do, is to illuminate that difference. He's a man of the Enlightenment, and education is central to his project. As he is famous for saying, if citizens are ignorant, if they're not vigilant, if they don't know what their rights are, and they don't recognize despotism in all its forms, then they will be enslaved. And it's not an accident or coincidence I use that term, because that's very much part of the way he thinks. That people who live under monarchy and aristocracy, who lack basic freedoms, are like slaves. They're They're not free agents. To be a free agent, you have to be well-educated. Everybody has to be educated. That's what distinguishes Jefferson from many Enlightenment figures. He's an advocate of popular political enlightenment. And schools are important to that. He had a scheme of education that went all the way from the village level to the university that he founded in Charlottesville, where I used to teach. And that's the capstone. The university is on top of those lower layers of secondary and primary education. And it's the place where future leaders will be educated. And this is what seems so quaint about early American ideas of education. Maybe the higher education, maybe the best way to think about it is that most colleges existed to train preachers in the century.
Yeah.
Lawyers became increasingly important, and now they rule the world, of course. But that sort of education for leadership, or what we might call civic education, it first assumes that there's a ruling class, and that ruling class needs to have advanced training, and it needs to see further than ordinary people can, given their humble positions in life. So again, it's one of the novelties of Jefferson's thought that he doesn't abandon the idea of a kind of natural aristocracy, people who are well-educated and enlightened. But what's novel about his approach to education, he believes that you should, and this is one of his famous or infamous phrases that makes you stop, rake the rubbish among ordinary folk. We don't think of ourselves as rubbish, most ordinary people, but rake the rubbish to come up with those geniuses,
those
really bright kids, boys, I should say, who might go on under scholarship support to achieve higher levels of education, then become part of the ruling class. I mean, that's a notion of social mobility through enlightenment, through education, and it's central to his whole scheme. It suggests the basic problem we often have with Jefferson. He seems so well-read. He's such a bookish guy, kind of a Professor Monquet. If he had his chance, he would be a professor today. He would not be a statesman. How do you connect him with the plowman? The connection between the plowman, the farmer, and the professor. And for Jefferson, it suggests a whole new different way of thinking of hierarchy, of difference, not as any essential superiority and an inferiority, but instead as a ladder all can climb if they are able. And that's what the University of Missouri was supposed to do. I would not claim that any university, the University of Virginia or Missouri or any other one today, has ever truly fulfilled that civic mission. But that was the justification. That's why Jefferson thought the state should support this enterprise, and that's why that was his great project in his retirement.
I guess this was a time before there were politicians who had figured out that they could get votes by putting plain spoken into such a zen-like state and putting down the educated as not understanding us common folk.
Right. Yeah, and that's a great distinction, Darren, because that notion of bringing down the elite, that's a populist idea, a very Donald Trumpish idea, which is absurd for a rich man to be making claims like that. But Jefferson is not a populist. You might say his notion of democracy is aspirational. It's to level up, not to level down. Populists always take the people as they are, and they say, you should be proud to be the way you are, and I'm going to join you in the gutter. Now, that's an extreme statement, because I'm all for the people, too, and there's nothing wrong with of the way people think about their world. We need to understand it. That's what we're trying to do now with Trump supporters. But there is a big distinction. Just because Jefferson's the icon of democracy in America and because he stands for foundational principles doesn't mean that we would recognize him as a Democrat with a small d.
Dr. Peter Onuf, our guest again, April 4th, a Monday. He's going to be speaking at a public forum at Leadership Auditorium at 3:30, and then a dinner lecture that evening at the Alumni Center through the Kinder Institute here on campus, democracy.missouri.edu is their website. You're going to be speaking that afternoon, the lecture titled, Where Do We Put Jefferson Now? Give us just a little bit of a sneak preview of what's going to be talked about there.
Well, the image that we have in mind is that Jackson has been seen as an iconic figure, as they say, and an iconic figure who's a kind of a statue. Icons are like statues. And as Connor Cruz O'Brien said many years ago, when the big scandal emerged about Jefferson as a slaveholder and how that disqualified him as a Democrat, he needed to be toppled from his pedestal. So when we talk about where does he stand now, that's that might be in our back, the back of our minds as we talk about it. As we have discovered, and you particularly in Missouri are discovering and know this, the way we name things and the people we remember are very much a part of the way we think about the world now. And Jefferson has rightly been a lightning rod for controversy. And I think Annette and I would agree that that's the great value of studying Jefferson, is that we can talk intelligently about those things that really are of compelling interest to us. And so we should be talking about race. We should be talking about the legacies of slavery. We should understand Jefferson in his context, but not to extenuate what we see as his crimes against humanity, but rather to get a historical perspective on him, which would in turn enable us to be perhaps a little more modest about our own position in history and about our own attitudes. Have we achieved this high level of moral progress and enlightenment that we can wag our fingers at Jefferson? Is Jefferson somebody we have to throw out along with the bathwater, the baby? Or is there a way we can take his measure and at the same time take our own measure?
On the chance that my supervisor might be listening at this point, let's get to what we refer to as cross-promotion. We at KBIA have fairly recently added Backstory to our schedule, enjoying it an awful lot. Talk to me about the basic idea of this program, putting kind of a historical perspective on current issues. There was a good program about the Second Amendment and guns and gun rights and things like that. Talk about how that works.
Well, I thought it was a lousy idea, Darren. To me, and that is the model, and don't tell anybody out there, the model was supposed to be Car Talk. I don't like Car Talk. He's probably on your schedule, and I shouldn't say
it is, yes.
Well, I didn't think it was all that funny, and I said to Andrew Windham, who was the founder and original executive producer, I said, Andrew, I don't think American history is funny, I can't imagine doing a show like Car Talk. Well, I was wrong, and what happened is that we got some radio professionals in to shape us and to shape the show. What it's really based on, I'd say, and this is going to be kind of deflating after the nice hype, is that we really enjoy hanging out with each other, me and my colleagues, Ed and Brian, the other guys.
Yes.
It's a kick doing this show. It's also can be hard work. We need to be shaped by our producers, who are superb professionals. They make us sound good, and we're grateful for it. But at the bottom of it all is just the spontaneous joy of talking about things that we love and are interested in. And I consider it a nice collateral benefit that it might be of interest to anybody else, and that it might be a useful intervention in public debates about the issues we talk about.
That's so wonderful. People have asked me about what I do, and I say the one thing I'm really good at is sit and visit. I like to sit and visit, and if other people enjoy what we're talking about, that's a bonus. So it's great that you've got the opportunity to do it that way.
Yeah, and we don't see ourselves as proselytizers or polemicists. Of course, we're ordinary American citizens, and we have our ideas about things, but they don't determine how we evaluate the past and how we get into our... I mean, I don't love Thomas Jefferson, for instance. He's just there. He's like Everest. You got to climb him. So I think we bring that. At least we try to bring that. I know it's impossible, and any philosopher would tell you that you can't suppress your own viewpoint and your deepest commitments, and they're there. Particularly when we talk about slavery and the Civil War and other issues. But we try to remain as dispassionate as possible. We want to reach everybody, not because we want to change them, but because we think they might change themselves if they had better information.
The book will be out soon. It's called Most Blessed of Patriarchs, Thomas Jefferson and the Empire of the Imagination. Peter Onuf has been our guest. Dr. Onuf, I enjoyed visiting with you. Thanks for taking the time.
It's been great fun, Darren.